Welcome, everyone. Episode 481 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to keep talking about the Portland Trailblazers in the wake of their decision to fire general manager and president of basketball operations, Neil Olshey. And then we're going to use that as a jumping off point. We're now a quarter of the way through the season. We're starting to see which teams do and don't have realistic playoff hopes or title hopes. So we're going to talk about some teams today that should really consider blowing things up and making a major change between now and the February 10th trade deadline. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is someone who I know is excited that we don't have to talk about the Chicago Bulls in this discussion. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
I had to see where you were going there. No, it's going well. I think it's about time that we actually start to talk about certain teams. You know, whenever we come into the season, we're always excited. Remember when we did the league pass rankings? We were like, there's not a single team that I don't want to watch.
Yeah.
I think we all knew to some extent that might change as the season progressed, and it has, because there are certainly some teams that I am not particularly interested in watching, not because they play a boring brand of basketball, because you know that they're playing on borrowed time. They're just organizations that need drastic changes.
Yeah, they're just frustrating watches, and that leads us right into the Portland Trailblazers, Mort, who, as we mentioned at the top of the show, fired Neil Olshey on Friday. There is the investigation into his conduct. Allegations arose. Basically, sounds like he was not a super fun guy to work for. The quote was, concerns around workplace environment by non-player personnel at the practice facility. The Blazers did not release any specifics of the investigation, nor should they, but I know based on the reaction that I saw on Twitter yesterday from Blazers fans, Blazers writers, everyone seems pretty happy that Neil Olshey is gone, Mort. So we talked about the Blazers last time about, you know, with Dame out, with Nasir Little out, at least temporarily. And then I believe Anthony Simons got hurt on Thursday as well. Kind of questioning what their long-term plan is. Well, now they don't have a GM or a president of basketball operations. They have an interim general manager, Joe Cronin. So how does he sort through the mess that he is inheriting here?
That is a really good question. I think everything is open for business. It should be, at least, in my opinion. I think now is the time to basically start reevaluating from top to bottom, and that includes Dame. I mean, I understand that he's been off limits for so long since he got drafted, but now it's time. It's time to look through every possible option. Do you go into a full-on rebuild where everything must go? Do you just say, well, now that Olshey isn't here anymore, that frees us up to trade CJ McCollum and like Norman Powell, and then we still keep or retain Dame, and then we find other pieces around him? I don't know. That's something that remains to be seen. Personally, I'm probably leaning towards just blowing everything sky high. Just everything, and starting over, including a new coach.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, we talked last time about some of the kind of ancillary pieces like Robert Covington and Yusuf Nurkic, both of whom are free agents after this year. And we were saying, you know, if you don't plan on re-signing those guys, you got to flip them prior to the deadline. Got to get something for them. You just can't afford to lose talent for nothing. But I agree. This forces a greater reevaluation of, you know, what are the Blazers hoping to do here? And this will be a common theme for a couple teams that we'll discuss today. But without Dame, you know, they go at home against the San Antonio Spurs on Thursday night and lose by 31 points. And this is a Spurs team that is 7-13 on the year, has not been super competitive against good teams. So, you know, of course, without your best player, you're going to struggle more often than not. But that's a type of loss that makes you think, even if everyone is healthy and, I don't think, let's even if like they got what happened to Phoenix last year, where you drop all these teams in the playoffs and they're without one of their best players. Like, I still don't think this Portland team could capitalize on that. So I think you're right. It does force a greater reevaluation. And, you know, based on some of the quotes coming out from Chauncey Billups, you know, Jason Quick had an article of The Athletic on Friday morning before Olshay was fired. And his article suggested that Olshay seemed safe, which we knew not to be true. But he also included some quotes from Chauncey, one of which really seemed to be placing a lot of blame on Olshay and this roster construction. He said, you know, we give up size every night, man. We're a small group, especially at 1, 2, and 3. They're all pretty much 6'3", but you have to find a way to just make multiple efforts defensively. Mm. And, you know, he's talking about, like, basically his team effort. He's like questioning their effort, which is also not a great sign. He said, my biggest concern at the moment is I want us to compete harder. I want us to be more competitive in every game. And I don't feel like every night we do that. So, you know, not what you want to hear from a first-year head coach 20 games or 25 games into the season. So, Mort, I'm with you in thinking everything should be on the table, including a Dame trade. But I think, you know, the priority heading into the trade deadline, given how much size you are giving up with a Dame, CJ, Powell backcourt, you got to move at least one of those three guys.
Agreed. But at the same time, I'm calling a little bit of BS on Chauncey overall, because, like, he also has Larry Nance Jr., who is a very versatile, you know, wing big, as we like to call them, who's playing less than 20 minutes per game after playing 31 last year. So if you were looking for some size or looking to counterweight some of your size disadvantages, why aren't you playing Larry Nance at all? That doesn't make sense. That is a little bit more of a scapegoat thing, honestly. Mm-hmm. I just think you can't really go out and say, oh, we don't have size, if you're not playing arguably your best big man. Like, that's not exactly something that I'd take a whole lot of seriousness in. But no, of course you need to break up one of that the aforementioned trio. Like we talked about the last time around, they have four guards who are all high productive. Yeah, you need to either, if you want to stay competitive, let's say they don't want to rebuild, you have got to spread out the wealth a little bit more. If that's CJ going for a wing or a big, okay. If it's Norm going for a wing or a big, fine. Just make sure that you spread that out a little bit, because Anthony Simons can come in and give you shots off the bench and, like, sort of kind of replace a little bit of what Norm or CJ gives you. Not to the full extent, I'm well aware, but he can. Like, he's a shooter. He's a guy who can go get buckets when he's healthy. So, yeah, of course. I mean, that was always the problem there, was that they were always very good at getting guys in the draft for guards, like, because remember, they didn't get Norman Powell, they got Gary Trent, who they then sent off for Norman Powell. So they drafted well when it came to guards, they just didn't really draft well when it came to wings or bigs or whatever. So now they need to find out to pluck those holes via trades.
Yeah, again, I mean, the good thing,
yeah,
well, sorry, go ahead. I was gonna say the good thing. For Portland is that, you know, because Covington and Nurkic aren't expiring deals, you don't have to, like, if you trade CJ or you trade Powell, or even if you trade Dame, it's not like you have to say, okay, well, who can fit next to Nurkic long-term? Like, you don't give a damn, right? Like, neither one of those guys is in the long-term plan, most likely. So it's, okay, regardless of which one of these guys we trade, let's say we trade CJ. All right, we've got Dame and Norm now as our one and our two. Mm-hmm. And then just figure out, like, what are you prioritizing in a trade? Like, if you are Joe Cronin or whoever takes over the full-time GM job, Mort, what would you want in return for one of these guys? Is there a certain positional archetype that you would be trying to target, or is it just, like, best player available?
So this is under the assumption that they don't want to rebuild, right? So what you kind of want is, I think, honestly, I realize that I'm going offense again here, but they need a wing who can handle the ball. That's been a problem. I mean, we saw that Robert Covington's more of a big than a wing because he really can't dribble the basketball, especially into a crowd. That's not his style. They need someone who is 6'7", 6'8", who can take the ball in his hands, break down defenses, get into the teeth of the defense, and create plays. Now, of course, those guys who can do that, who are that size, they're extremely valuable. So you're not going to find that for a CJ. So maybe you just create a major package if that's the way you want to go into it. And people will point out, oh, Ben Simmons is tall and he can dribble. Yeah, right. That's not what I'm arguing. Yeah. I'm saying someone who can get into the teeth of the defense and actually shoot. So it's really tough. And because when I see those components that they have in Portland, like if you're trading a win now player, which CJ is, for another win now player, like that's going to diminish the list around the league. Like that, who is interested in doing that? Like, if a team out there is willing to take on CJ, it's because they want to win now, but they don't want to relinquish one of their own win now guys. They want to relinquish some of their youth instead to go all in. So that's really the problem by going into one of those retooling processes once in a while when you want to win, but you have guys in their primes that you want to send out. It's actually a little bit difficult to find a package or a taker because that doesn't really align on the interest level, which is why I think, ultimately speaking, the best solution here is to blow everything sky high. Nuke the ever-living hell out of this roster. Everything from top to bottom. Everything must go.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at their long-term sheet, Covington, Nurkic, unrestricted free agents next summer. Anthony Simons, restricted free agent next summer. The only guys they have under guaranteed contract beyond the 22-23 season are Lillard, McCollum, and Powell because Larry Nance Jr. becomes an unrestricted free agent in 2023. Nasir Little becomes a restricted free agent. And if you're, you know, if you've got Dame, CJ, and Norm, are you really paying up to retain Anthony Simons next summer? Probably not. So, you know, all the guys they signed, Ben McLemore, Tony Snell, Cody Zeller, all are on one-year minimum deals. Like, they just don't have much left in the tank here. Like, they, you know, the Zach Collins thing did not pan out for them. That was one of their big whiffs in recent years. So there's not a ton of promising young talent in the pipeline that you can say, okay, even if we do blow this thing up, at least we've got something to hold on to. So, like, I think that's probably even more reason to, if you, you know, there is not much reason to, like, try to tread water. Like, even if you trade CJ or trade Dame, it's going to be very hard for them to maintain a 45-50 win ceiling, you know, potentially get into the first round, second round of the playoffs. Like,
right.
I fear that this thing is so far gone that there's no going back, but I do want to, I have two CJ specific trade ideas, neither of which involve Ben Simmons, because that has been discussed by everyone for the last 6 months. One of which we'll get to in a second because it's the next team that we need to hit. The other, this has come up a lot on Sixers Twitter because, once again, the Sixers fans are completely out on Tobias Harris. So something around CJ for Tobias Harris. I don't think it would be a straight up deal, but, you know, let's say that's the main piece of it. CJ McCollum to Philly, Tobias Harris to Portland. Would that help solve any of these problems that we're discussing?
Am I to understand that as Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons having equal trade value?
I don't know. I hope not.
Sure. I mean, look, it would balance the roster a little bit better for Portland for sure. Does it make them substantially better? I don't know. I mean, I will say it probably puts them up a little level just because now you have scoring from all over. But do you trust that roster in the playoffs? I don't know.
Nope.
No, right? I mean, okay, so let's play it out. Let's say Chauncey actually gets wise and starts playing Larry Nance a little bit more.
Right.
Because, again, he's probably your best. Hell, I want to say it. He's your best big, and I like Yusuf Nurkic, but Nance, the passing, the defense, the ball handling, the versatility, I just think that's better. But let's say you slide him in at the four next to Yusuf Nurkic. That forces Tobias Harris into a three-man role, which he really hasn't played in years.
Right.
But okay, like, yeah, I guess it's fine. And then you have Norm at the two, Dame at the one. That's interesting. You could also go in a totally different direction than say, you know what, Jusuf Nurkić? You just go to the bench. And it's Larry Nance at the five. Robert Covington slides down to the three. And then you have Tobias taking on the four role. That might be more intriguing to me because that should be a versatile lineup where you can really do some damage. I think part of the problem for Portland for so many years is they've had very few multi-positional players, Brian. Like, Dame is a guard, CJ is a guard. They haven't really had that quote-unquote guard forward who can really swing up. Well, they did, but they traded him for Norman Powell. I mean, Gary Trent was actually a guy who could have done that, a little bit of that. But Norm is, I know he's being used as a three and as like a traditional wing, but like he's a guard.
Yeah, he's 6'3", right?
Yeah, he's 6'3". I mean, there are limits. I understand that right now in Chicago, we're seeing Alex Caruso like guard Julius Randle and stuff like that, but like that's not Norm. That's not his game. He's an offensive-minded player. So you need some versatility that they don't have right now, some positional versatility. Getting Tobias, who's a forward, I would say more of a four than a three, but he's forward. And hell, you could probably even get away with playing Tobias as a small ball center in like super small, short stretches here and there. Ooh. Because, yeah, I know defensively that would be bad, but
yeah,
my point is you just need more positional flexibility.
I mean,
they were so pigeonholed, and they have been pigeonholed for years. So getting someone in there who can actually switch around, I think that would behoove them. But again,
that was the appeal of Larry Nance Jr. in theory.
Yeah.
Was the additional versatility that they've lacked in recent years. And I agree.
It wouldn't be in theory only. It should work in practice as well. It's just Chauncey Billups isn't playing his ass.
Yeah, well, he's started to. He's come around to it recently. But
right. But not enough, man.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think you can a Dame, Norm, Tobias, Covington, Nance, or even little Tobias and Nance. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some intrigue there, but again, are you just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic? Is that going anywhere? I don't think so. So I think ultimately you're going to end up seeing both of those guys go, CJ and Dame. But
right. The
one thing I will note before we move on here is that, you know, Olshay was the one who drafted CJ. He was, by all accounts, extremely, extremely high on CJ, perhaps to the point of overvaluing him. So I think his dismissal does at least open the door to, you know, a greater likelihood of CJ being traded by the deadline this year. I don't think it was going to happen if Olshay stayed.
Right.
Now I think it's probably 50-50.
I mean, so CJ has never been bad. I mean, ever since he started breaking out in his third year and up until now, that's been over 450 games, and he's averaging 22 per game and hitting over 2.5 threes on almost 40%. So, I mean, the guy clearly has been good, especially getting picked at 10th. So I understand the idea of retaining him, but Olshay comes with a track record when it comes to doubling down on draft, I don't want to say blunders because CJ wasn't a blunder, but like let's take Myers Leonard, for example. Like that was not a good draft pick. And then he extended him because that was his guy. That was his selection. Or you just kind of go, why? Like he gave him, was it $41 million back in the dreadful 2016 summer?
Sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like why? Because he didn't want to lose face. That was it. That was the reason. He didn't want to lose face. Okay. You can't have a general manager thinking that way. You just can't.
Yeah.
And you have had offers on the table for CJ over the years that you've turned down that might now look really good. That's a problem. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. CJ is now more fair game than he was before. But I don't want that to be used as some sort of excuse for downplaying CJ's abilities because he's been good.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, if he's actually obtainable, he's going to be one of the best names likely to be moved ahead of the trade deadline.
I agree.
Okay, so let's go into, I mentioned I had one more CJ specific idea, and this segs right into the next team that we need to discuss, because Twitter already went bananas about this last night, apparently. This is the downside of me going to sleep so early now. I miss post-game Twitter meltdowns. But the Indiana Pacers last night played the Miami Heat. They were at home. The Miami Heat were without Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. The Miami Heat got rocked in their first game without those two guys. They beat the Indiana Pacers 113-104. Pacers, you know, still obviously without TJ Warren, who it sounds like things are trending in a positive direction, but he's not expected to return anytime in the next couple weeks, at least.
Right.
And Sabonis was questionable for this game. He actually came off the bench. Torrey Craig started in his place, but he still played 37 minutes. So, you know, other than TJ Warren, you got your main, and no TJ McConnell either, but like, you know, you have four of your five main starters, LeVert, Brogdon, Turner, Sabonis. You lose to a Heat team without Butler and Adebayo. And I know I tweeted about it this morning, and Tony East, I believe he's a Locked On Pacers guy, pointed out this was not their first horrifying loss this year. They also lost to the Denver Nuggets without Jokic, Murray, and Michael Porter Jr. LeVert did not play that game, but Turner, Brogdon, Sabonis did. Leading scorer for Denver was Will Barton with 30. Zeke Nnaji came off the bench with 19. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, this is a pair of really, really egregiously bad losses. Indiana right now, 9-16, 13th in the East. I mean, I know it's only 25 games into Rick Carlisle's tenure, but like the chatter is only getting louder about, you know, Sabonis Turner has been like the central version of can Ben and Joe play together for the last couple of years. Like people have been ready to break this group up, and hell, it's the, you know, the central version of can Dame and CJ play together? Like all right. These, you know, all these duos that haven't won yet. Like this is what happens after a couple of years. Do you think Sabonis and Turner are the problem, or is it just like, what is wrong in Indiana right now? And will TJ Warren's return fix anything, or do they also need to make some pretty substantial changes here between now and the trade deadline?
No, I mean, it's not just one problem. That's the thing. Like, I don't want to boil everything down to, oh yeah, this is a Turner Sabonis issue, because it's not just that. Is that a issue? Yeah, for sure. That is one of the issues that you need to figure out, like what to do long term. But more so than that, they also need to figure out what is Caris LeVert going to be for him. Like what is his role moving forward? What about the perpetual injury machine that they're on? What about that? Do they need to go out and invest in a better training/medical staff? Are there underlying issues there? I'm not saying there are. I'm just saying that's something you need to check out at some point, because if your team consistently suffers through major injuries, I mean, then you need to see if there's something internally you're not doing right. That's pretty logical to at least go that route. And I think the bench as well, like, so let's take O'Shea Brissett, who we were very high on coming into this year.
Yeah.
Because he played fantastic basketball last season.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on there? Like, he's been just a ho-hum bench player, where last year you saw him splash triples, play hard defense, rebound, dribble the basketball. Like, there was a lot to like there. And this year he's just kind of been there when he's played. So again, it comes down to consistency. What's your rotation? Who are your guys? And if that takes a few trades to figure out, sure, so be it. If that takes breaking up Sabonis and Turner, okay, fine. You got to go that route. But I think it was Zach Lowe who in his Friday column said that this was one of the most boring ass teams in the NBA.
Yeah. Like, I forgot the exact term, like aggressively mediocre.
Aggressively boring. He's not wrong. And I think the players feel it as well. I mean, it's very, I don't know the term of it. It's just like, it feels like it's a marathon just to get through a game, just watching them play.
Yeah.
It's, and there's no energy. It's almost like they don't, necessarily like each other, but that's not me saying that. Just that's just you know, the feeling that you get. But then I also remember we had Caitlin on the pod who kind of insinuated, yeah, things weren't always great in the locker room.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole Nate Bjorkgren experience, I think, right, was its own situation. And, you know, I said this morning, but it's like there are so many great people covering this Pacers team that it bums me out that they are this aggressively mediocre. Like, right, Caitlin Cooper is one of the smartest minds in basketball, and her having to sit through this direct for 82 games sucks. But, yeah, you know, her and then Mark Schindler, who's now, he just hopped on with the basketballnews.com. Both are great Pacers followers if you aren't following them already. But, you know,
I'm only going to ignore Mark's food
takes. Yeah, his food takes are aggressively bad. Yeah. But, you know, they watch more of the Pacers than we do. So I'm going to just quote some of their observations that I've noticed throughout the season. And it seems like a lot of it just comes down to they don't have an identity. Like, right, they just don't know what type of team they want to be. Are you, you know, defensive mind? Like, is your defense going to force everything for you? Are you built around offense and you're going to punt on defense? Are you a pick and roll heavy team? Are you going to run everything through Sabonis? You know, who is your number one option on this team? I think Lowe phrased it like Sabonis, Brogdon, and Caris LeVert all think they should be the number one guy. But is there a clear pecking order? Or, you know, you brought up LeVert, like, efficiency has never been his thing, but we're at 41.4% overall, 25.3% from three this year.
Yeah.
That is a touching tribute to Russell Westbrook. Without the rebounds and assists, unfortunately. And then, you know, we've got the injury history on top of that as well. You know, I will say Chris Duarte has been a nice spot for them.
Right.
But he's already, you know, he was old for rookies, right? In his age 24 season. So, you know, how much does he have, like, substantial room to improve? Or is he just going to settle in as a nice rotation player? And at the part of the draft that they got him, that's fine. Like, if he ends up just being a 5-year starter slash, you know, key reserve, cool. Good for you. Like, yep, it's hard to find productive players outside of the top 10. So that's fine. But, like, I don't think he's going to be a needle mover for them. So it this is, again, it's like they have a lot of talent. I don't know if it all fits together. But the good thing for Indiana is that all of these guys are on extremely reasonable contracts.
Right.
So if they do decide to make some changes, it should not be very difficult. Like, Brogdon, they can't trade him this year because he signed the extension, but, you know, he is the highest paid player on the team at $21.7 million this year. Mm-hmm. Sabonis is at $19.8 million. Miles Turner is at $18 flat for the next two seasons. LeVert is $17.5 million this year, $18.8 million last year. TJ Warren's $12.7 million this year, free agent after it. Jeremy Lamb's $10.5 million this year, free agent next summer. TJ McConnell, $7.5 million this year. So, like, if they do decide to make some changes, they should be able to. I think one of the tricky things for them is if they do go after, you know, a bigger name star in a trade, they're actually going to have to package together a couple of these guys, because these guys, like, you know, a Sabonis, you would think of being enough to bring in someone like us, you know, the Pacers or my other team. For CJ, like, I think something around Sabonis and CJ could make sense for both sides, but the Pacers would have to attach probably Jeremy Lamb just to make the salaries work.
Right, right.
It's not that should not be a sticking point at all. They should be totally willing to do that, but right, you know, it's another rotation player, so then they're going to want even more back in return from Portland as well.
The thing for me about Sabonis is I think he's the guy you might want to keep around.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that he shouldn't be your first option. I get that. But he is so skilled offensively. I mean, we're talking about a guy who is an automatic double-double machine, who is severely efficient from the field, who is capable of racking up 5, 6, 7 assists per game from the big position. Now, the thing that I question is, like sometimes he gets his assist by standing still at like the foul line area. That's not great basketball because then you kind of lose movement. So I wonder if he just needs a change of scenery as well, in which case, sure, you could do that. You could flip him for someone else. But then if you're the Pacers and he blows up elsewhere, you're just going, damn it. That's what we needed. But I also understand it might be necessary. I understand the CJ trade if the Pacers want to go in a win now window right now, but he's still 5 years older than Sabonis. Yeah. We're leaving a lot of age out there. If anything, if Sabonis is available right now, Dallas should be calling.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's the team I think he'd be fitting well in. We have Dallas on the list as well for later.
Yeah. I mean,
that's Luka's partner, if anything. Like, that could be interesting. The thing is, what do they have in Dallas that could be interesting? And this is the problem we always run into. We identify certain guys who would kind of fit with Luka, and then we go, well, what do the Mavericks have?
I mean, Kristaps is the obvious one.
Yeah, but does he, like, if he comes to Indiana next to Miles Turner?
Yeah.
Unless you make it a three-way trade, but, like, would Kristaps even help the Blazers?
If you're going under the assumption that Covington and Nurkic, you're, like, not building with them in mind, or you're going to flip them later? A Nance Porzingis front court is at least conceptually interesting.
Yeah, I will say I do think they've needed shooting from the big position in Portland.
Yeah,
but he's just so volatile as a shooter. Like, he will go 0-7 one night, and then he goes 7-11 the other. Then he'll have 20 missed games in the middle of the season as well. Basically, what I'm trying to say here is I don't know what his trade value is at all.
Yeah,
I am assuming it's somewhat low.
Yes.
So, does it make sense to essentially flip CJ for Porzingis? And, like, what's in it for Indiana? They get CJ. Well, so let's think about this. So they get CJ. You have a Malcolm Brogdon, CJ McCollum backcourt then. Okay.
Yeah, and I think that can make sense. Like, yeah, I think from Indiana's perspective, you know, Brogdon can play on and off the ball, and honestly, right, CJ can too. So
yeah,
that, like, and when Warren comes back, I think that's the thing you have to. I mean, again, if you're not going to re-sign Warren, then you should just trade him. But, like, if you want to keep Warren around long term and you believe in him, especially given that nice stretch we saw in the bubble, like, he's a four. It's much like we were talking about Tobias Harris earlier. Like, you can play him at three, but you're going to be wasting him there. He should be playing power forward. So you have to make room at either by trading Sabonis or by trading Turner. But, you know, a CJ Brogdon, LeVert, Warren, Turner starting five is kind of interesting.
Well, no, so that's the thing for me, because that's the final thing. Then get rid of LeVert.
Yeah.
I'm out on LeVert at this point with the efficiency need. I mean, he is what he is at this point. That's not to say he's not an NBA player or an NBA rotation player. He clearly is, but I don't think he's a starter necessarily. I mean, you just can't keep having a guy in there who's just chucking to the extent that he is. He is not an efficient basketball player. I mean, the name of the game in today's league is efficiency and it's defense, and he provides very little of it. He's a shuthound, and that's it. Plus, you don't really need his offense if you're getting in CJ and you're getting back TJ Warren in the lineup. Like, you would have Brogdon, CJ, Miles Turner can also score. You would have TJ Warren. You're going to need someone else at the three, and right now you're probably cooking up Ben Simmons trade.
I wish. No, I know. I feel like there's a four team. Whoever can come up with this, just DM it to Daryl Morey. But there is a four team: Sacramento, Indiana, Portland, Philly. Ben Simmons is going out, and somehow everyone ends up happy. And I don't know what it is, but I know it's out there somehow.
Right. But I'm coming around to the idea of having, CJ in the backcourt with Brogdon, and then a TJ Miles Turner frontline with player to be named later at the three.
Just, I mean, Justin Holliday and Torrey Craig are both under contract there for the next 2 years.
They are. That's true. But I was thinking moving LeVert and Stuff to actually get someone in there for three. It's really like flesh out the starting lineup.
Well, I mean, hell, you can, for now, you can steal minutes with Holliday or Chris Duarte.
Yeah, that's true. Man, think about this. Remember last year when nobody wanted DeMar DeRozan?
Yeah. Yeah.
He would have been fun there.
He could have been. Yeah, I mean,
he could have been a lot of fun in Indiana. All right, well,
I'm with you on thinking if you can find a taker for LeVert, it's probably that's at least another area that I would pursue. Like, depending on what they want to do with TJ Warren, if they want to re-sign him, one of Sabonis or Turner's got to go. I hear you on wanting to keep Sabonis and trade Turner potentially, because I think Sabonis is the better player and has the higher value. But because of that, he might be the guy to trade.
Right.
Like, it just seems like Miles Turner's trade value is not super high around the league. Like, you know, Boston was tied to him with the Gordon Hayward stuff, I think. And, Danny Ainge just did not seem to be very high on him, which is ironic because he would actually be a great fit in Boston. Mm. But, you know, like, we've been tantalized by him for years because you see the skill set and you're like, man, this guy could be the next unicorn. And then here he is, averaging around 13 points and 6 or 7 rebounds a game, blocking every shot under the sun. You know, he's led the league in blocks in 2 of the last 3 years. He's leading the league in blocks right now. So, great rim protector. And, you know, he's shooting a career high 40.5% from three. So, like, the skill set is there. He's just not able to create his own shot very often, not aggressive enough offensively. Like, it's just not ever going to happen for him. That's okay. The Portland and Indiana are the two where it's like, if they don't make major changes by the deadline, just what are we doing here? Why are we wasting everyone's time? These teams are going nowhere, like, try to shake things up and see what happens.
So I have two remaining thoughts here about the Pacers. First things first, just to close off the Miles Turner and trades ideas here. Mm-hmm. You know, I went on TV the other day, and I pitched the James Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga for Miles Turner and O'Shea Brissett idea.
Oh.
But that's, of course, under the assumption that Indiana is willing to pivot into a youth movement. We know from history that they aren't necessarily that inclined. They're a team that very much, they're very Spurs-esque in the sense that they want to make the playoffs. They want to compete. So I don't necessarily foresee that as all that realistic, but if they were to say, okay, let's get younger, I think you could pretty easily flip both Miles, Sabonis, like a lot of their pieces, because like you said, those are good deals. Those aren't old players. Like Miles Turner is 25. What is Sabonis, 24 or something? 25 as well, maybe? 25.
Yeah, I believe he's 25.
Okay. Like, those should be easy to flip as well. I mean, these aren't all players. So if you want to go into a youth movement, you also have to gauge, how can we optimize our return? Do we get a better return of trading some of these guys for win-now players? Or do we actually get more bang for the buck because we're sending out guys who are fairly young so we can optimize, you know, pick acquisitions? And I understand it's going the Oklahoma City Thunder route. I understand that. But that's a viable option. Like, I don't think it should be dismissed out of hand. Secondarily, my second point, and that's the final point about this, even if we did the original thing we just talked about, like you made the Sabonis for CJ trade, and you ended up having, you know, Brockton, CJ, player to be named later, TJ Warren, and Miles Turner in your lineup, do you then figure out who, like, what kind of direction you're in, or what kind of identity you have? Like, is that even enough to understand who you are as a basketball team? I'm not sure. Like, you're still left with some offensive minded players, some defensive minded players, and that's it. It sort of feels like the same situation Chicago found themselves in years ago when they kept drafting one way players.
Like,
you need multiple players who are two way guys. right now, yeah, they have Malcolm Brogdon. And that's it?
Roughly? Yeah, I mean, you could sort of make an argument that Miles Turner has that potential, but again,
like, right,
I don't,
there's think that he's P gonna... word again, though.
Right, right. I don't know. Like, potential and reality have not lived up to one another yet. I don't know exactly if it's going to.
So, yeah, I mean, that's why they have identity issues.
Yeah.
They need two-way players. And getting CJ is not the answer to that. He's a one-way player as well.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All right, so the other team that came to mind immediately in this discussion for me was the Sacramento Kings, because we talked about them an episode or two ago with all the De'Aaron Fox stuff. Like, much like Indiana losing to Miami without Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, when Sacramento lost to the Sixers without their entire starting five from last year, it's just, you should have been forced to make a trade the next day. Like, Adam Silver should have hired a Colangelo just to make you trade 2 second round picks for Ish Smith or whatever. So we've discussed them enough that I don't think we need to get into them today, but please know they're on the list as well. One team you brought up more on Twitter that I wanted to get into was the New Orleans Pelicans, because you ran afoul of our friend Mason Ginsburg by pitching that. So I wanted you to have this floor. explain your rationale why you think the Pelicans are in the tier of teams that need to make major changes.
Well, so I think, honestly, I think Mason and I agree on certain things about this. I mean, this isn't the finished product. And mm-hmm. what I was saying is they need to figure out kind of where they want to go. When I say drastic changes, I'm not necessarily suggesting that they pivot into a new rebuild or they sell the farm to get better right now. It's about understanding where you're going. Like, mm-hmm. I still don't understand why they haven't played Kyra Lewis or Jackson Hayes more than they have, especially with Zion out. Like, you know you're not going to be super competitive in those games, so why not give them the reps? And that bothered me, because, like, if you don't give those guys the reps, you're basically losing in two categories. You're losing in not developing them. You're also losing in not building them trade value. Because if opposing teams are looking at that lineup and or that roster, and they're going to go, well, you know what? They don't even, that bad team doesn't even trust Kyra Lewis to take the floor. So what kind of trade value could he even have? Like, you need to see what you have in those guys. Kyra Lewis was too good in college not to get a fair shake in the NBA. And when he ended up on the Pelicans, I remember telling you, I don't even remember if we were recording or if it was off air, but I remember telling you, I don't know if that's the place for him, because everything is so Zion-centric that it just felt like a bad fit. So what I kind of want to see here from New Orleans is just pick a direction. If you want to go for a win now because of Zion's weird situation, then play the kids so you can amp up their trade value and you can ship them off for established veterans near the trade deadline. That's kind of it, because if they don't do that, then what are they doing? Right now they're playing Tomas Satoransky and Garrett Temple. Like, why? Why? What good does that do you at this point?
Yeah, I mean, because the West is so bad, it's keeping them within potential striking distance of the play-in tournament. I mean, right now they are 5 games back of the Denver Nuggets, and we're recording this during the Nuggets Kings game, so I'm gonna, yeah, oh no, it's over. So yeah, they're now
five. Oh, the Nuggets Knicks game, you mean?
Oh yeah, Nuggets, yeah, yeah. So yes, they are now 5.5 games back of the Nuggets for that final play-in spot. So I think, you know, if Zion just recently had another setback with his foot, so we don't know when he's gonna debut. Like, at this point, I'm just wondering if they're like Charlie Brown in the football and the Pelicans are going to keep being like, we swear Zion's coming soon. And we get to like February. It's like, oh yeah, just wait till after the All-Star break. He's coming.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't put too much stock into expectations for Zion Williamson this year at all.
Right.
So it's a fair point. Like, what is their plan this year? Because with all the stuff
that came out. Long term, too. Not just this year. Long term,
yeah. Too. Well, because with all the stuff that came out about Zion and being unhappy and wanting to compete, and now they are where they are in large part because he hasn't played for the first 25 games. Like, does this end up being a lost season? What does that mean for Zion? Like, you know, in a just and fair world, Zion would look at this roster. If, like, let's say he returns, he plays 30 or 40 games, they miss the play-in tournament, whatever. He would look at this team and be like, well, I missed so much time. Of course they were going to struggle without me. I want to give this another shot. It's unfair to hold that against them. The NBA is not a just and fair world, and it will not be surprising at all if Zion Williamson, with his contract extension, him becoming eligible for it next summer, says, no, I want out of New Orleans. I don't want to sign this extension. He pulls like what Kristaps did to the Knicks a couple of years ago. So I think that's the fear that New Orleans has to be operating with in the back of their minds. And I think that's probably why they're trying to accelerate this win now window to the extent that they are. But it's a fair point. More like, what can they do between now and the time that Zion returns? Like, I guess they are playing these, you know, the vets, the Temples and the Satoranskis over some of their younger guys. Hernan Gomez, who has actually been playing well for them recently.
He has. He's been playing really well. Mason pointed that out too, and that's very true.
Yeah, so they're, you know, they're playing those guys to potentially set themselves up for a late season run. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if when they fall, or if they fall out of the playoff race, or, you know, if Zion's return keeps getting delayed, if those guys start to get more minutes late in the year. But it'll be after the trade deadline. Like, it'll set them up for a deal next summer.
Right.
You know, I think the fundamental question with the Pelicans still remains, like, how much confidence do you have that Zion wants to sign this extension and stay long-term? Or, I mean, hell, even just sign the extension. Like, those are almost two separate things at this point. Now that, you know, it's based on the precedent that Ben Simmons is setting, like, even if he signs the extension, are you sure that in a year or two after he's going to not try to demand the trade?
No, not at all. I think the bigger issue at hand is something much larger than that. And Mason kind of alluded to it in our conversation on Twitter as well. He basically said that they shouldn't be where they are right now. This is Zion's third season. This shouldn't be a discussion of going all in on the win now train. And he's absolutely right. This entire Zion Williamson era in New Orleans, where it's all about, hey, get better right now because I want to win right now. Dude, you're barely out of your teenage years. Relax.
Right.
And it's also concerning to me because what is Zion's rust here? Is that because he knows his body is not going to uphold, like, withstand for a long time? Like, that's just me speculating, but, like, I don't understand why he's such in such a rush, because he's also undermining the team by doing so. Like, David Griffin and the entire organization, they've made mistakes as well, but, like, they at least the logic is fine. They saw, all right, we have Zion Williamson. Let's build him a team long term that can compete for 10 to 12 years. That's why they went out and got all those draft picks and whatnot. I mean, additional, or just, you know, got to get to Kyra Lewis and Nikhil Alexander Walker and Jackson Hayes and all those guys, right? And Herb Jones this year, as well as Trey Murphy. I'm looking over the roster right now. They also have Brandon Ingram from the Lakers. Like, they have some components. They have young players who, in theory, should be able to be paired with Zion for the next many, many years to provide him with enough talent to eventually become contenders. Mm-hmm. But now Zion is basically flipping the script and going, you know what? No, that's not good enough. I want to win right now. And now you're leaving the Pelicans in a situation where they go, well, these guys aren't developed yet. Like, they don't have the trade value. We can't cash them in for what you want. Like, sure, we would love to add a Karl-Anthony Towns to the roster to help you out and give you more spacing and to give someone to give you a rebounding presence alongside you. We would love to do that. But you know what? These guys are babies. Like, they're just out of college. we haven't they haven't gotten the necessary NBA experience yet to actually have that sort of value. So where do you go from here? And that's why I put them on the list. I mean, I just think it's such a mess of a roster. It's a mess of a roster in the sense that Zion is pushing everything from the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Based on what Zion wants and based on where this roster is, those two things don't communicate well with each other.
Yeah, I mean, these two guys are always going to be linked because they went 1 and 2 in this draft. But you look at the Pelicans since they drafted Zion versus the Grizzlies since they drafted Ja Morant.
Right.
And, you know, it's unfair, again, to compare their records this season because Zion has yet to play. And I know Ja's now out with a knee injury for a couple weeks. But right now the Grizzlies are 4th in the West at only 12-10. So that, again, speaks to the relative down year that the West is having. But, like, the Grizzlies have taken the correct approach to team building around Ja Morant. They have been in no real hurry to build a contender around him because they know they have this extended window. You know, they've made plenty of mistakes too. The Justice Winslow trade did not go in their favor. It was a gamble and it didn't work for them.
Agreed.
You could argue that so far the returns on the, you know, the trade up for Zaire Williams and swapping Steven Adams and Jonas Valanciunas, given how well Valanciunas has played in New Orleans, you could argue that was a bad move as well, but you know they did it in part to help take the training wheels off for Jaren Jackson Jr. Yeah,
I was about to use that term as well. That has been how that trade has been marketed as taking off the training wheels. I kind of see it,
and it's been working. Like Jaren Jackson got off to a slow start this year, but lately he's been phenomenal, and like that's the key for your long-term future. None of the other roster filler really matters right now. I mean, like, sure, hopefully Desmond Bane ends up being a nice steal of 30, which it seems like he is. You know,
yeah.
Hopefully Zaire Williams pans out. Hopefully, you know, you can keep building around De'Anthony Melton, Dylan Brooks, Tyus Jones, and some complimentary guys. Brandon Clark has been better this year than he was last year. So, like, you know, of course you want to have productive young guys beyond those two, but those two are your future. So for the Pelicans, you have to ultimately figure out, is Brandon Ingram the future next to Zion? Do we have another long-term keeper other than Zion? Assuming, again, that Zion is willing to stay. And unfortunately, they just can't answer those questions right now because Zion is out. So, like, I don't think the Pelicans need to be in a rush to make any moves. They're not in the Portland or Indiana camps for me where, like, I'm going to be mad if they stand relatively pat at the trade deadline. But next offseason is setting up to be extremely pivotal for them. We'll see what happens, you know, if or when Zion signs an extension or what. Who knows on that front. But you know, if this season ends up being somewhat lost because of his injuries, like I don't think they can afford another season like this.
I have a question as well. I know you saw it during the course of summer as well. The Pelicans were all in on Nickeil Alexander-Walker. This third year was going to be the breakout. He was going to be an all-star or close to it, all that thing. I was rooting so hard for them to be right.
Me too.
I really was, because that would have been the big thing that they needed to really accelerate the entire process, I think. Because even though he's young and Brandon Ingram is still young, like, if you had a very productive Nickeil Alexander-Walker, a very productive Brandon Ingram, you could make the argument that that's a trio that's good enough, along with Zion, of course, where you could stay competitive while the rest of the roster developed. But it looks like Nickeil is going to need a lot of time still to develop himself.
Yeah.
Which I can't figure out if he is, like, it sounds so rough to call him patient zero, because that's not fair. I mean, you know, I think those expectations that were put on him were entirely unrealistic and entirely unfair to him. but like him not developing, how big of an issue has that been for him? I think it's been major.
Yeah. And to be clear, again, it's only 25 games so far this season. I know Mason and Shamet Dua have made this point on Twitter a lot. Like, once Zion comes back, everyone slides down a peg and they're in more comfortable roles. And with all the attention, the defensive attention that Zion attracts,
maybe that
helps unlock Alexander Walker. But I agree, the early returns have not been super positive in that regard.
Right. 36.7% shooting from the field overall. I mean, even if he was playing a tier over his responsibility level, like, that's just shoddy. That's really bad. I mean, he's not even getting to the line. He's hitting under 30% on threes. I get it. And I'm not putting that at his feet necessarily. I understand that Zion being out just leaves everyone in a bad situation. Oh, man. See, and this is what it comes down to, Brian. We need to have that conversation. We need to have it. Is Zion worth the trouble?
If he's willing to stay in New Orleans, which is the $200 million question. Yes.
Right. Yes. Okay. Fine. So let's roll with that. Then my follow-up question is, can he stay healthy?
Right. That we can't answer.
Right. Yeah. So those are two major question marks that's hovering over Zion at this point. One is he the guy you can really build around? Is he going to be mature enough to actually be that team leader moving forward? Or is it going to be drama, drama, drama?
Mm-hmm.
The second part of that is weight concerns, injury concerns, all of those things where it's just, I'm sitting there just thinking, I mean, if the value for him right now is sky high, and I don't know if it even is because the guy has only played 85 games in his career, but if a team out there is willing to just give up everything for him, like, you gotta entertain it, right?
Again, I think it comes down, like, if you're getting intel behind the scenes, I mean, I know there were reports last summer about his family wanting out.
Right.
If you have a strong inkling that he is going to pull a Kristaps and refuse to sign the extension this summer, yeah, you have to entertain it. But if you think there's a reasonable chance that he's going to sign the extension, even if he does pull a Ben Simmons and tries to demand a trade a year or two from them, I don't think, I mean, I understand why you'd be inclined to, but the ceiling of Zion when healthy, I mean, he was putting up efficiency numbers around the rim last season that were unprecedented.
Historic. Yeah. Oh, yeah, like absolutely historic.
Shaquille O'Neal level dominance. And he was only, second season, hadn't played that much. Like,
and
he's just such a unique player that, I think if he can prove he can stay healthy, like, maybe, I mean, there's no way that they're going to be able to actually succeed in doing this, but, like, ideally you would build the injury protections like Joel Embiid had into his, and that the Denver Nuggets wish they had in Michael Porter Jr.'s extension right now. Like, I don't think Zion or his agent agree to it. I think it's going to have to be a full 5-year, fully guaranteed max. I still think he's worth the trouble. But I will say this on the point you brought up about, Kyra Lewis Jr., Jackson Hayes, and even Alexander Walker, who really hadn't gotten much of an opportunity before this year. Alexander Walker and Jackson Hayes are also eligible for extensions next summer.
Yeah.
So I don't think either guy is going to get one unless it's a super team-friendly deal or unless, Nikhil maybe turns his season around. But that speaks to the importance of letting these guys, giving them the reps, giving them the minutes right now, because you're going to have to make a decision on them soon.
Yeah.
And, like, what incentive do you have to sign Jackson Hayes to an extension when you haven't seen all that much of him?
Right. Yeah. I mean, hell, if you go with Kyle Lewis, he's only played 1,200 minutes in his career.
Yeah.
That's not enough to go off. I just don't know what it is. I mean, you're giving all the minutes to Herb Jones because of his defense, which, okay, great, but he's still behind the curve offensively. So I don't know if this is one of those things where the coaching staff is putting so much emphasis on defense that they're kind of forgetting the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you need to get your guys out there and you need to test them out in a variety of roles. And it's this is why I put them on the list. On my Twitter list of teams that I kind of felt needed drastic changes, because I don't know what they are. I don't know where they're going. I don't know what their plans are with Zion. I don't know what their plans is are without Zion, if he should leave or get traded or whatever. I mean, everything is just, you can go in a million different directions here.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm kind of looking for a drastic change to show me and show everyone, oh, this is the path that we're on.
So we are an hour into this episode. So hopefully this is now a safe space, because the next team on your list, Morten, was the Los Angeles Lakers.
So you're waiting, the Lakers fans have left? Okay.
I hope so. For your sake, I hope so. I mean,
why would they
understand it? Yeah, I understand. Right now they are 12-12. They're the number 7 seed in the West. You know, a lot of guys have been in and out of the lineup, LeBron James especially.
But kudos for him for beating COVID in 3 days. Apparently.
It seemed like it was just an incorrect positive test.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
It's has been the joke for 48 hours or so thereabouts. But man, yeah.
We've always said he's superhuman, right?
Yeah.
I guess this is more proof of it. But yeah, I mean, look, it's a fair question to wonder, you know, what's the plan here long term? Like, the Russ thing has just not worked out how they hoped it would. They've got a lot of guys.
Shocker. Yeah. Trading for Russell Westbrook hasn't worked. Wow. I've never heard of that before.
I know. And, you know, they've got Talen Horton Tucker's on a 3-year deal. Kendrick Nunn's on a 2-year deal. They have absolutely no one else under guaranteed contract for next season. And the Kendrick Nunn's is a $5.3 million player option. So it's Russ, LeBron, AD, Talen Horton Tucker, a bunch of free agents next year. And, you know, they're going to have maybe the non-taxpayer mid-level. I don't even know if they will, actually. I guess it depends on where the cap comes in. But at best, they'll have the non-taxpayer mid-level, probably just the taxpayer mid-level. And they'll have 11 roster spots to fill. So,
yeah,
I think it is fair to question what the long-term plan is here, because Russell Westbrook is sure as hell not turning down a $47.1 million player option next year. Like that, I guess that's plan A. Just beg him. Yo, LeBron, tell him you're going to put him in Space Jam 3 and offer him $50 million if he turns down the player option. Like that's the best
bet. Well, can society withstand another Space Jam with LeBron starring in it?
Fine, have AD be the star of Space Jam 3. Either way, just bribe Russell Westbrook somehow with $50 million or $75 million of Bitcoin to turn down his $47 million player option.
I still can't get over how bad Space Jam 2 was. Not just for me, but like, I showed it to a 10-year-old who was looking at me like I was the dumbest person alive. Like, why are you showing me this utter crap? What have I done to deserve this? Are you punishing me? Because it's ghastly. All right.
That's how Lakers fans feel about the team this year. So that's actually a perfect description of the Lakers season so far.
I'm actually kidding. He's 10, so he liked it because.
Oh, I'm not kidding. That is how the Lakers fans feel about this season. So
all right. Well, look, so why I had them on the list, it's self-explanatory. You brought it up with Russ, but I mean, at the same time, you know, LeBron is feeling the age now. He's not the same guy. He is.
Yeah.
That's not to say that he's not a star for the next couple of years. That's fine. But you also have Anthony Davis, who is, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not regressing. He's not regressing as a player. He's regressing as a shooter. I think that much is fair to say right now, at least. He's having one of the worst jump shooting seasons of his career, if not the worst jump shooting season of his career. And you kind of wonder, what is the play here 2 years from now? Where are you going? If Russ is going to stick around next year as well, you'll have this trio. It'll be an old trio primarily. And how do you fill up the roster alongside it? Okay, so maybe you pivot back into shooters, but you kind of did this year and it hasn't really worked out. Then maybe you say, oh, we want to get younger. cool, those players cost more than you have.
So right, right.
I just don't see the pathway here for them to get substantially better.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, like, they honestly had one of the better off seasons based on their resources than you could have expected, like landing Dwight Howard on a min deal.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, Malik Monk on a min deal, Carmelo on a min deal.
Right.
Ellington, Bradley, like all these guys on minimum deals. Kendrick Nunn at, you know, the mid level when he was probably hoping for twice that, if not more. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just so financially limited that, I mean, okay, you're going to be scrounging for minimum contract. You're going to have the one mid level probably. And then you're going to be scrounging for minimum contracts unless you trade Talen Horton-Tucker and then, you know, some of these mid deals this year to bring in another rotation player. But Talen Horton-Tucker is your one main trade chip at this point, unless, like, I don't think they would ever actually consider trading LeBron or AD. But, like, that's the nuclear option, right?
It is, and is one that I've been thinking about privately that I have not shared on Twitter because good luck. And the thing is, like, the Lakers, I don't even think they would because of their whole we're a star team.
You're right.
Like, that's
right.
That's our brand.
LeBron would be the one to trade if you trade either one, but you're just not trading LeBron James.
No, you're not. You're not. Even though you... I was about to say probably should.
Yeah, there's an argument to make for it, but like, yeah, he's the one who came first. He's the one that brought you back to relevance after a half decade in the desert. He won you a ring. Like, in 2K, you would look at this roster and be like, all right, well, I can't trade Russ unless I turn CPU trading off. So, okay, like, yeah, it makes sense. Let's trade LeBron. But you have to factor in the off-court stuff. Clutch already represents half of this roster. Clutch would burn the Lakers to the ground.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, that won't happen. I mean, Clutch owns the Lakers in some capacity.
Right, right.
Look, this is difficult, and that's part of the issue, because you're assuming that LeBron is going to only worsen as he ages, which is, like, no one has beaten Father Time. LeBron won't either. Anthony Davis is another one who I kind of wonder, how will he age? Like, how will he look in 2 years?
Right. He's like 28 going on 38.
I'm glad you said that.
I was thinking it,
but I'm glad you said it.
Yeah. The amount of bumps and bruises he has picked up throughout his NBA career. Like,
right.
You just don't know how sustainable it's going to be.
Correct. It's the annual 20 to 30 missed games as well. It's like the fact that he can bump knees and miss 5 games, right? I mean, it's such an issue, I think. Mm-hmm. If you can't rely on him to be your number one guy moving forward, where you kind of pivot to him from LeBron, then what's your end game? Like, what's your plan if you can't do that? If you need someone who is at all times better than Anthony Davis to win, how do you get that guy? And who is that guy? And what can you even trade to get that guy? Because Russell Westbrook is not going to fetch you anything. I mean, he's just not.
Right.
After this year, who in their right minds would trade for Russell Westbrook? Unless it's like to send a worse deal the Lakers way.
Right. Like John Wall for Russell Westbrook.
Right. Which has already been done in a way.
Yeah, right, right. But I mean, that's the problem. There aren't very many huge contracts like that, and there are even fewer egregiously bad ones. It's like Russell Westbrook or Kevin Love.
And this is why I have them on the list. I just don't, I don't understand what they're trying to do. I don't see how they turn this season around. I don't see how they turn the next couple of years around, because everything, like, do you think LeBron is even going to be open to pivoting towards more younger roster that is a couple of years away from competing? Hell no.
No.
Hell no.
Yeah. I mean, like, If you're a Lakers fan, you're just eyeing the summer of 23 because that's when Russ's contract comes off the books. LeBron is off the books then too. And then AD has one more year and he has a player option in 24-25, which might honestly be inclined to pick up because then the new TV deal will kick in.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard to see a way out of this for the Lakers. But they're the Lakers, so everything is going to work out for them somehow. We just aren't sure how it is right now.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that. They're like at the trade deadline, they're going to turn Taylor Horton Tucker and Kendrick Nunn into an all-star somehow.
Yeah. Like, or just flip Taylor Horton Tucker for TJ Warren, and TJ Warren's going to go on a tear for them.
Right, right. I was thinking Sabonis, actually.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
Right, yeah. Like,
or they're going to get off Westbrook somehow. I mean, that's the key, but I just have no idea how.
I don't know what would be hilarious, and I think we put it up for beforehand, but like Westbrook for Kyrie. A LeBron and Kyrie reunion.
I mean, if it hits mid-February and he's showing no signs of getting vaccinated, you might as well get something for him, I guess.
Right. And then it would be an OKC reunion in Brooklyn too, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, Kevin Durant. Yeah, Kevin Durant will absolutely veto that. He wants no part of ever playing with Russell Westbrook again.
James Harden might not either.
Yeah, true. True.
They had that conversation after the reunion in Houston. It was like, can we work together? Nope.
No, we're good. Thank you.
Which again, so I remember when I said patient zero, that's Russell Westbrook here for the Lakers.
Yeah.
That's the issue. He's the issue. I just don't know where to go from here. That's the problem. I mean, I can sit here and I can go through all the bad contracts. I can go through all the variations of how you build a better roster alongside LeBron and AD. And I just keep coming up with the same thing. And that is, you should have kept Alex Caruso. You should have not traded for Russell Westbrook. You should probably have gone for, I don't know, DeMar DeRozan. You should probably have gone for someone else. Just not Russ. Mm-hmm. Almost like anyone but Russ. But they went with Russ.
Yeah.
And it's just, you're in it now. I don't feel bad for you at any point. You decided this. I don't care if you miss the playoffs and you start crying about it. I don't care. This was a bad call from day one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was easy to see this not working out in their favor. And so it is.
And then they're going to win the championship somehow.
right. The other team that was on your list that caught my eye more, we talked about them recently because of the Tim Bontemps article, but you had the Boston Celtics out there.
I mean, we've gone through them, right? I mean, what are they? At this point, what are they? They are the two Jays and what else? I would argue that's all they have at this point that is locked in as players who should be retained. And I realize that people are trying to send away Jaylen Brown in trades. Mm-hmm. I don't think they should. I don't think they should send out Jason Tatum either. And I've been adamant about that. Everything else on that roster could go as far as I'm concerned. So they have two pathways here. The one is find guys who are established, but in the same age bracket as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Coincidentally, you brought up Miles Turner. He'd be a candidate, or even a Domantas Sabonis instead, if like either or, because both of them are 25. That is in line with Jason and Jaylen. Or you say, screw it. We go all in right now. We're trading away Robert Williams. We're trading away Josh Richardson for whatever value he has. Grant Williams, Romeo Langford, whatever, draft picks, whatever we have, just ship it away for veterans, and we go all in right now. I don't like option two. I like option one better. I think they need to have a long-term window. But how do they get that? What do they send away? You're thinking of something. I can see it in your eyes. What are you thinking of?
I don't think this is more just a chaos idea than uh-oh. I think this would actually happen. But
yeah,
they wanted a playmaker, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, Russ.
Let's talk about Russell Westbrook. Yeah, Russ for Horford would be the salary match, even though Horford has played well for them. But, you know, you signed Robert Williams to that deal. And then Horford and Josh Richardson for Westbrook and every pick under the sun that the Lakers still have left.
Oh, boy, Bryce.
Again, that's mostly cool. Mostly just for the chaos of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is vile. Yeah. That is vile. Could you imagine, like, the two Jays have it going and double teams start swarming and they send it out to Russ for spot up threes? That would be the ugliest thing ever.
Oh, it'd be so good.
Who they should really go after? And I realized he's not available because the Pelicans got him this summer.
Devontae?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know he's not a good defender. I get that. Offensively, yeah. He's right. He's exactly what they need. He's a pass first point guard who can hit spot up threes.
It's like all he does.
It is literally all he does.
Right. Right.
But that's what they need.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. That like there are still huge questions other than Brown and Tatum. And, you know, again, Horford has played well for them this year. I don't want to take anything away from him, but
yeah.
You know, he's 30 in his age 35 season. Like, you're not building around Al Horford long term when you have Jason Tatum.
Yeah,
he's my age.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jason Tatum is 23. Jaylen Brown he just turned 25.
Jason Tatum is 19, please and thank you.
Right, 19 going on 24 in March. But, you know, like these guys are still young enough that you have to think about their long-term window as well. So I do think if there is a Horford deal out there, they should consider it, mostly so I can see Anna Horford meltdown on Twitter. You know, like they signed Richardson, Williams, and Smart to these extensions back in the offseason. So I don't know. This is another team kind of like the Pelicans where I would think we'll probably see bigger changes next summer versus during this season, because Horford will then be heading into the final year of his deal and only I used to know this off like it was my own child's name. 14.5 million of the 26.5 is guaranteed. So he will be a lot more movable in the summer unless they want to trade him now for Russell Westbrook. You know, Schroeder's going to be a free agent, and I'm guessing he's going to be out of their price range. So,
oh yeah, he's elsewhere.
Yeah, that would be. No, I still don't even think. God, I was going to say Horford and Schroeder send him back to the Lakers, but I don't think that's enough salary for Russ. I think they would have to send more.
I don't know why you're so hooked up on that deal. You just want
to. Yes, you do.
because you hate Boston and you're.
Right. I want nothing but terrible things for that team. And I think Russell Westbrook would have a similar effect as he is having on the Lakers right now. And
The objective analysis of Brian Toporek, everyone.
I love Russ. You know this, but he's like flipped from you could live with the negatives because of the positives.
Right.
We're no longer there. The negatives are outweighing the positives by a substantial margin at this point. Like you cannot have a team with Russell Westbrook on that kind of a contract. And this is like the Tobias Harris discussion earlier too, right? Like if Russ was earning half of this money, or if Russ was on a Schroeder contract, then who gives a damn? Because it's not going to be that destructive to your team. You're going to have the ability to build around him with other guys too, but Russ on a $44-47 million contract just hamstrings you so much. You know, with him, AD, and LeBron all in those deals, those guys take up close to $120 million in cap space. Like, that is your cap space. You will not have cap space with him on that type of a contract. You're only going to have minimum deals and a mid-level instead of, you know, if the Lakers had $20 or $30 million in cap space to play with, plus the room exception, then maybe they could have built a more fleshed out roster and not had to rely on a bunch of guys who are probably going to be playing in the big three in 2 years.
No, but okay. So let's look at realistic options for the Celtics, right? Like I'm going back to my two options here of going win now and going with guys who are on a similar timeline as the two Jays.
Yeah.
Assuming win now, and assuming the Kings are willing to just pivot into a full-on rebuild.
Ooh.
What would it take to get both Buddy Hield and Rashawn Holmes?
Oh my gosh. I thought you were going to go with De'Aaron Fox.
No.
Interesting. Okay. Buddy. See, I mean, this is the problem for Boston, though. Like,
yeah.
Especially with all of these guys restricted because of the extensions. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's the problem for any team. Like, if you're dealing with the Pelicans, like, every team, if you're the Pelicans calling up another team, they're like, all right, cool, we want Zion or Brandon Ingram. Like, any team dealing with the Celtics as a trade, their starting point is going to be Tatum or Brown, and then right. Brad Stevens is going to hang up. He will go say F yourself in a very polite way and then hang up. But, like, I don't know if a lot of these other guys have a ton of trade value. Like, I'm sure Marcus Smart teams would be interested in, but he's Romeo Langford. Yeah,
not. See, that's the problem with me as well, because if you're Sacramento and you're trading away Holmes and Hield, you're rebuilding. You're going into saying, okay, we're building around De'Aaron Fox now. So we want draft picks. We want young guys on rookie contracts. We don't want a Marcus Smart.
Right.
Or an Al Horford.
Yeah, like again, I mean, Rob Williams can't be traded until July of next year. Like, he would be a guy to target, especially if you're giving up Holmes. But, I mean, him, Nesmith, and like, how do you make the salaries match too?
Well, so what's the partial guarantee on Horford, or is it completely non-guaranteed for
14.5 million? Guaranteed next offseason.
So you could maybe get away with that and just swallow the money next year.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if Boston's willing to give up picks.
Right.
You're thinking like Horford, Williams, picks, and then like Nesmith or Pritchard as well?
Yeah, maybe not even Robert Williams. Maybe just because the poison pill issue. But like you said, if it can get worked out.
I gotcha. So you're saying that, like, between now and the trade deadline, because then Horford counts as $27 million this year.
Yeah, that's
but what then, I'm yeah, thinking. Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Then Horford.
It would be Horford, it would be Nesmith, it would probably be Grant Williams. Like, I almost want to tell the Kings, take your pick of the young guys.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, because Hield at like 20-ish million, and then Holmes should be pretty cheap. I think he's only a 10 so, right? Yeah, he's a 10. So, okay, Hield's at 23.1, Holmes is at 10.3. So you're looking at 33.4 million. And yeah, Horford's at 27. So that, throw in anyone else, since salaries will not be an issue.
Right. So let's say it's Horford, it's Aaron Nesmith, it's Grant Williams, and here comes the kicker, it's picks, because those guys are not attractive. Like, you take a flyer on Nesmith and Grant, but it's the draft picks. It's all about the draft picks. Is there any viability in that trade? Is that a logical trade? I mean, is it feasible?
For Boston, it should be.
I'm thinking for both sides. Like, for Boston, I'm thinking this is a slam dunk, because you get an elite floor spreader who's finally going to start, who's not going to get jerked around the lineup anymore. Like, he's going to be a full-time starter. You have Rashawn, who is one of the most underappreciated centers in the entire NBA. He's going to get in and play as many minutes as he'll like, and then you can pivot away from Robert Williams next summer or whatever. Maybe for a point guard, because that's what you'll still be needing, and then you can pivot away from Marcus Smart as well. But I'm just thinking, if you get a four-man core at the very least of Hield, Brown, Tatum, and Holmes, that's not bad, right? I mean,
no, that's good. Like, I would hope Sacramento could do better than Horford, who does nothing for them after this year. And then, you know, some flyers on young guys who hopefully they pan out. But if they're going to Sacramento, they probably won't.
Right. And then the draft picks, that's the issue right there, because they're not going to be high draft picks.
Right.
Presumably. So
Kings are going to screw them up if they regardless.
Yeah. No, but I mean, look, even if they do send picks, I mean, they would have to be totally unprotected.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like top three protected, top one protected. Right. Yeah. Like super, super, no lottery protection, no top 10.
Yeah. No. Nothing like that. Like real draft picks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Celtics should definitely be interested in something like that, and they should be sniffing around for that type of thing. I don't know that the Kings should be interested. They should do better.
Yeah, like they can deal with Charlotte alone for Holmes and probably get Luke Knight and stuff.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Well, see, and this is why Boston's on the list, because if they don't, if they can't even get a Buddy Hield and a Rashawn Holmes, like, then they need to reevaluate, because that roster alongside the two Jays are just not working.
And they don't have Danny Ainge anymore to leak all of the trades they almost completed. So that is just going to seem like they're sitting on their asses all day, not doing anything. Yeah, it's an interesting point. Like you're right. You know, they've got the two centerpieces. As like disregard the Bontemps, you know, any reported tension between them, but like assume all is hunky dory with those two guys, are gonna keep building around them. It is the question of okay, what is the rest here? How do we make this make sense? And you're right, I think Horford probably is the key if you're able to flip him this year. But yeah, I think they're just going to ride out this year and then see what happens next summer when they have more flexibility to trade the guys who they signed to extensions. Plus Horford's only partially guaranteed, but you know, you can also make the argument like right now, especially with Brooke Lopez having undergone back surgery and we don't know if or when he's going to return. Ben Simmons' saga is still lingering. That could go all year. Kyrie's saga is lingering. That could go all year. Like, right now, there isn't a team in the East that is so overwhelmingly favored to win the title because of all of these issues. Like, this feels like the year to get frisky and start making some moves. So maybe that incentivizes Boston or any other of these teams to be like, all right, you know, the window's actually open here. Like, there's not a Kevin Durant, Steph Curry Warriors, or the Miami Heatles, it's like, why even bother?
But can they be buyers? Do they have enough to be buyers?
Yeah, but I'm skeptical that they don't.
Right.
But I don't know, it only takes one team, right?
Like, it does, but
Richardson can be traded in January. So Williams can't be traded. Richardson can be traded in January. And then Smart.
But who wants Josh Richardson? Like, let's be honest, who wants him?
Smart can be traded in January 25th as well.
Right.
So Williams is the only one who will not be eligible to be traded by the deadline.
Right, Robert Williams, because Grant Williams is.
Yeah, Robert Williams. Yeah, Grant Williams. Who cares? Who cares about Grant Williams?
No, well, Grant Williams is better this year. Like, let's be
fair. Yeah, I know. But if that's the hang up on any deal, I will not believe that Danny Ainge is not still working for that team in some capacity.
Yeah. And that really is the issue here. When you look at that roster, you just go, ugh, like outside the two Jays. There's just, like you brought it up, like Josh Richardson. Who the hell wants Josh Richardson? Who's out there? Is there a team out there that's going, you know what we really need? We need Josh Richardson. Like, that's our guy. Like, no, that's not happening. Even Marcus Smart right now, Marcus Smart is earning so much money now that you're making kind of the calculation in your head going, he's a fantastic defensive player, but is he worth that kind of coin?
Josh Richardson, the next team to acquire him, it'll be like the Arrested Development meme where it's like, well, this has never worked for anyone else, but maybe it'll work for us. Yeah.
I feel Russell Westbrook is the owner of
that. Yeah.
But
it's a fair point.
No, I mean, but yeah, no, I think it's rough because Marcus Smart was such a, for a long time, viewed as this, you know, Celtic forever kind of player.
Right.
I think that ship has sailed.
Interesting.
I'm not saying like because of chemistry issues or anything, like he got the extension and all that, but like he takes up a fairly significant percentage of their cap long term. Mm-hmm. Like they'll have to move him at some point. Like he's not moving the needle much.
Yeah. It's a fair point.
And also can we talk about how his defense, while still great and all that, like it's not as explosive as it used to be.
Oh boy.
No, but it's
Lakers and Celtics fans on the same episode. Are you trying to channel me?
Dude, can we agree on that?
Yeah, I mean, I own, like, if I'm filling out my first team all defense ballot, I don't know if he's making it on there.
Right. And that's what you're paying him for.
Yeah, and that's the standard that you were holding him to prior to this year. So
right.
Like, even if it's he's not a bad defender. You're not saying that.
No.
Yeah, it's like maybe he lost like half a like letter grade in his defense. I could see that.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm going at here is he's going to be 28. He was a guy who played a lot off of energy as well. And mm-hmm. it's the same thing that we talked about with Joakim Noah and stuff like those type of guys. Like, when the energy starts to fall a little bit, you become a bit more complacent. You're not going to be as effective as you were before. Now he's starting to call out his teammates a little bit, which I actually respect. He wasn't wrong. That's not the issue. But that's not going to endear him to those teammates. That's going to be a thing. The salary, I don't know. It just seems like it's the perfect storm for the Celtics now to make the argument that, okay, like maybe we have some options in the offseason. Now it's time.
Well, that is a good way to wrap up our episode before we infuriate any more fan bases. So thank you all, as always, for listening today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.